Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What's good, internet? It is January 16th, 2017. It is a day off for us for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We are recording this a little bit early, recording this on Friday the 13th. Spooky.
Yeah.
Ahead of time, so that we can take the day off and relax and reflect in this a historic week.
A week. Mm-hmm. It is in the history books. Like it is technically historic by definition.
True.
And you know what we're going to go in is what we kind of decided. You know, this has been the world. So I know that we have listeners coming from all over the world. I'm not here to diminish anybody or to say that like our political perspective is more important or anything like that. In fact, what I'm trying to say is like we live here, which means that we give a fuck about this for very selfish reasons. We live in America, and at the end of this week, the next president, the president-elect Donald Trump, will take office. Unless something absurd happens between the time of this recording
and the time, you know, in the past week, absurd. Lots of absurd things have happened. So you
it's
know,
been
don't count it out.
Yep.
It's true. Who knows?
More absurd than the regular absurdity.
And all of that absurdity has, I think, pushed us to be in a place where what we wanted to do was take some time out of our normal schedule to like think a lot about politics and about games in relation to politics and about the world and you and us and everyone around us. And so we kind of set out and said, hey, send us some questions about politics and games. And we had some great questions, so we're going to spend the next like 40 minutes, 35 minutes answering those. It was kind of a question bucket episode, a politics bucket episode, and do our best to provide some good answers. And I'll keep the questions that haven't, you know, that maybe we don't get to for maybe a future politics bucket episode. Maybe it'll be a recurring bit, depending on how this goes. As always, joining me, Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
How's it going?
Well, can we go back to talking about Mario Odyssey?
Yeah.
New Donk City.
Is Mario going to fuck
punching
a human
robots,
in
no.
Mario Odyssey? Is that the politics of our time?
I wish. I wish it was. No. I wish that's what we were doing. And instead, we are doing a different thing. I think we just jump in. You know what I mean? Like, let's just jump right into this bucket.
Jump
in. We'll try to... Sometimes you can find solace in working through things with other people. So I need a number because we got a lot of questions. I think we got like 30, 31 questions.
Shoot, 30, I was going to say we could have gone with the number of the new president, but I guess we don't have that many. We don't have 45, huh?
Yeah. We don't have 45. We have 34 questions.
Okay.
So give me a number from 1 to 34.
I'm looking at the number 13 on my desk.
Yep.
It is the 13th. Mm-hmm. It is Friday the 13th.
Oh, I did not even. Okay, great synergy.
You know what? That was perfect.
It was. So this comes in from a concerned citizen who just says,
good.
Highway Point,
hello.
Why is it bad to have an agenda? Semi-sincerely, a concerned citizen. That's like a fun joke question, but it's also kind of a real question in that, like, I think a thing that comes up a lot is there is an accusatory tone whenever anybody says, like, you wrote that with an agenda.
Yep.
Or like, oh, you can't believe what that person says. They have an agenda. I think it's a topic worth digging into a little bit.
Yes.
There's a lot they're saying when they use the word agenda as a pejorative. Because I think what they're actually saying is your value system does not line up with my value system.
Right. And your agenda is not mine.
Yeah. You're basically saying our agendas are not in line for whatever reason. You know, this often comes up when we're talking about the injection or discussion of social issues into video games. Is at least that was my first encounter with people throwing around the term agenda. Although I'm sure that has come up before, it's been most prominent in the last couple of years or last 5 years. It's been a while. But I think it's a difference in value systems and is often used as a pejorative just because you disagree, and that's your way of saying that someone was malicious when they were just different.
Yeah. It's something that comes up so much. There was always sort of, especially in the early 2000s when I was just sort of becoming politically aware and I was also sort of coming out, there was always the gay agenda. That was always something that everybody sort of talked about, that conservatives sort of talked about, and a lot of queer folks sort of were like, yes, this is our gay agenda, goddammit, you know, having equal rights. And I'm seeing a lot of that come back, you know, things that Ben Carson has said recently about having extra rights. That's the new... Having extra rights is the new gay agenda.
It's the new having an agenda.
Yeah,
it's
the new sort of version of it, which is, you know, ridiculous and hurtful and harmful, because it kind of assumes that, oh, you're different, so you can't have the same rights, you know, that sort of idea. And saying that, oh, you get special treatment because you're different. And it's like, no, actually, you know, there comes a time and a place where you have to kind of talk to people on one level and say, like, look, do you think other human beings have value? Do you think they have rights? Cool.
Right. Cool.
Good.
Then that's
we can
just
go
regular
from
ass
there.
Rights.
But
right.
But sort of until we're at that level, there's a lot of jockeying for position and a lot of...
There's a lot of catch-up work to be done.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, for me, obviously, I think that the flippant response is like, there is no such thing as a non-agenda, is not having an agenda. Everybody has an agenda. And I think that that's correct, but I also maybe feel like this is our opportunity to unpack something like that a little bit. So for me, the thing to remember, there's kind of like two things. One is that we are all motivated by something, and that motivation can be anything from like survival to faith to love to patriot, like all that stuff boils into what our agenda is. And then second is, sometimes though I see this used, this sort of like you have an agenda, used by people who not only want you to instead have their status quo agenda and share that, but believe that there is a way to perform politics pure from a position of pure objectivity, from a position of pure rationality, from a place where you could somehow do politics without any sort of passion or motivation or interest, like a disinterested sort of politics. And in some ways, this is one of the traits of democracy that we do hold up publicly, is like disinterested debate in such a way that like we can work out if this is rationally good for us or not. And while I understand the value of that thought process, it's also important to understand that the history, that rationality has a history in the politics of itself. That like for a long time, emotion, like the notion that emotionlessness is better than passion when it comes to debate, is tied into a history of like misogyny and like building the notion that like the brain is more powerful than the soul. Like it's this huge thousands year old like history of politics and philosophy that got us to the point where now one of the things we think is, if you're calm and if you have bullet points, you're better than the person who's crying on the Senate floor. And I'm not saying that I prefer the latter to the former necessarily, even. And myself, like, I like nuanced arguments. I came up through like debate teams and mock trial and all of that shit. Like, I like that. But I want to make sure that we reject the notion that just because something comes from a point, a place of experience or passion, that should mean that that's a disqualifier versus someone who has no interest and no emotional connection to an argument. So,
and I think you can actually see this having broken down in the evolution of games criticism in the last 10 years, like as games criticism has gone. Well, in some ways you could argue that there was not even really games criticism until like the last 10 years. And I don't mean that to be slanderous to folks that did reviews and like EGM and things like that. But there used to be this style, this approach to critiquing games that was like very objective. It was like graphics, sound, gameplay, and those were broken down into individual metrics that were weighted like differently. And then things like GameSpot would introduce things like a tilt, that like the, you know, like there were all these ways that the belief was you could rationally break down games into sections and judge them in that way, and then they all like added up, and then that was the score of the game. And then something that's changed is this, you know, as a lot of outlets have moved away from scores, as people have started putting more of their selves and their reactions, their personal reactions into games, where you can play a game that maybe would have scored poorly, but you loved because of like this one thing or these couple of things.
Right.
And so you end up recommending and saying, it's a great game, even though it's bad. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Games are messy. Our feelings are messy. Our expressions of that and our reactions are messy. And, you know, I think sometimes when this word agenda comes up, like, it is holding on to an older value system of judging games that, right. For some people, that's still how they judge games. And in some ways, I can respect that. I just also don't understand the lashing out at folks that are headed in a different direction. And I think that's where that clash sometimes happens, is like, no, like, let's think about it in terms of sound and gameplay and graphics. And then, like, the moment you start saying, like, no, but it made me cry, and so who gives about shit about that other stuff?
Right, who cares that there isn't HDR in this? Who cares that, like, sometimes there's some bad anti-aliasing? Like, the whole effect was greater than those things, and it would be silly to, like, knock it, blah, blah, blah.
Right, like, great examples, like, Bayonetta, too, right? Like, right, we're, like, right. A lot of those reviews are, like, going to tangents about, like, the male gaze, and, like, how does this character, like, how are you supposed to respond to it? And then there'd be responses to say, like, yeah, but also, isn't that game super fucking good and really fun to play? Right. And, like, both those things are true. Yeah. I think for a lot of us, especially the people, you know, in this room, like, you know, we're ready to engage on that on both levels.
Totally.
And then...
To be fair, sometimes that makes us a bad fit for different, like, listeners and readers. Like, yeah. So a thing I just realized is we just recorded our Nintendo Switch podcast episode of Waypoint Radio, like, moments ago. And I'm realizing in retrospect that I didn't mention that Zelda had some frame rate issues on the Switch. Some of the big vistas when you turn the camera and there's a lot of action happening, like, chunked up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't skip that intentionally. I bring my own biases forward. And that's the thing that I think I admit readily whenever I write about a thing. It's not that I think I have the perspective. I have my perspective. And sometimes I think people can see a writer's perspective and think that they think that that is the one true vision and one true take, and that my values are the ones that should be spread far and wide, and people should care about games the way I care about games and not their way. I completely get if you're someone who has been wired through their life to, like, cringe when they see a frame rate drop. Like, that, you don't have to apologize to me if, like, you hate it when frame rates dip below 20. Like, it doesn't bother me as much because I like different things, but, like, I get that you
right.
care, that other people care about that, and that would be a reason why they may not like the stuff that I write and say, but I don't know why that should be a reason for them to dislike the stuff that I like, or that I like and say. Yeah. Do you know what I write?
Yeah,
and say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's an important distinction. Yeah. All right, let's get another number.
All right, Danielle,
one
from up.
1 to 33 now.
1 to 33.
We're gonna cut through these.
I'm going to be 33 in a month. Let's go with 33.
Awesome. So this is actually a question that I don't even know if it came in for this specific podcast, but I was like, this is close enough and interesting enough to toss it in. This is from Sean, who asks, do you ever look to foreign press to get perspective? If so, who do you look to? And I guess that let's talk about that both in terms of games and in terms of not games.
I certainly read quite a bit of, you know, BBC News, that sort of thing.
Yeah, The Guardian.
The Guardian is...
You know, Guardian, plenty of that.
Disclosure, I guess Vice has a relationship with The Guardian now.
Oh, really?
Vice is doing
breaking
some, like,
news to me.
Yeah, so Vice, a couple of months ago, so I should actually, like, hey, shout this out to other people. We announced, The Guardian and Vice announced a partnership back in December. They are, like, basically bringing a small team of Guardian journalists to move into the East London offices of Vice UK to, like, bring news expertise to, like, help boost up the Vice News, like, kind of, it's not a startup, but, like, Vice have really moved into, like, the traditional news space over the last year, starting a nightly news show and a new news-focused site and, you know, social media presence and all that. And so that's really cool. And that was, like, a really cool thing for me of, like, oh, wow, like, a bunch of stories that I really think were great over the last couple of years have been broken by The Guardian. Their coverage of a lot of stuff, both in the UK and worldwide, including in the States, has been really fantastic. So I was like, yeah, nice, thumbs up. I like The Guardian.
Yeah, but I think there's obviously, you know, a huge language barrier there that, you know, I would certainly love, like, wider perspectives. I mean, I think Twitter is a great way to get those perspectives. So it's like, I sort of rely, you know, on Twitter, for example, I try and follow less people and then create lists based on my interests. So it's like I have a politics list where I have tons of people that aren't in my main feed, but those people like run the gamut of like different types of domestic and foreign press and follow different beats within politics. And I rely on those people to sort of relay that expertise of differing perspectives, because one, it's just hard to seek that stuff out. And two, you know, those language barriers like are still difficult. But yeah, I mean, it's...
I don't speak German. I don't speak French or let alone read it. And that means that there are fantastic news outlets that I just don't have direct access to.
If this person has, if this person that wrote in, if you have recommendations on like if there are better ways for any of us to approach that, I think that is certainly something all three of us would be interested in.
Totally. Yes. Totally. It was a thing I really thought about a lot while I was living in Canada for a few years. Was like, it was really destabilizing in a way I didn't anticipate, because I moved to Canada to do my PhD in like basically leftism, right? Like I'm a big very like open left dude. Like that's very clear. And so I went thinking like, whatever, like I'll move to Canada. I don't really have any deep seated, like, I am an American citizen. I was born here. I'm interested in events here. I moved back partially because I felt like I was too far away from the political events of my home country, where I was invested and wanted things to go well. But then I didn't think that it was like, there's nothing in me that was like, America's the best country. Like, I thought I was past all of that shit. And then I got there and like was thrown off when I went to go see Dark Knight Returns. And there was this moment where there's the moment where the kid is singing the national anthem and Bane blows up the Pittsburgh Steelers stadium. Sorry, the Gotham,
yeah. The Gotham stadium. Somethings, whatever, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, like, I'm probably the only one in here who's like, who this is working on in the same way.
Yeah. Right.
Because I grew up in places where this happened every other, like, I went to basketball games, I went to wrestling meets, I went to football games locally, you know, and like, heard this song in these events. And even though it doesn't have, even though in my rational like front brain mind or whatever, I don't have any like, oh yeah, that's a better song than every other national anthem. I'm not saying that, but like it's still the national anthem that I grew up with and that I associated, you know, holding my hand over my heart and like eating popcorn at the Phillies, you know, at the whatever the Philly stadium used to be. Now it's some other thing, you know, like that's those drill into your brain. So it is a thing I think about. I think about like our American perspective and when we talk about America as if it's the world when it really isn't, as much as I can. And I still fuck up. So
the one thing I will say, it's foreign from sort of a different definition. But when I moved to San Francisco, I like made a broader effort to continue reading, which is the Daily Herald, which is the Northwest suburbs of Chicago local paper, so I could kind of keep up with like what was happening in the neighborhoods I grew up in. And I kept reading the Chicago Tribune because it was, you know, the major newspaper in Chicago. And now that I moved away from San Francisco, like I also keep up and read like out of the Chronicle, because like I lived out there. Like I care about the minutiae of like what's happening in the Mission and like the different districts in San Francisco. Totally. So while that's not foreign in the sense that like it's domestic in terms of the United States, like I still like I subscribe to local press to keep myself abreast of like different places I've lived, because those communities are still important to me.
There's also another way of reading this, in also adjacent to that is foreign in terms of, you know, perspectives that you find intelligent and that you respect, but you know, respectfully disagree with. And I tried at many various points in my life to make an effort to read conservative media that does not come from a place of hatred. Like, I'll just say it out loud. You know, I think there are some places that certainly do operate out of a position of valuing everybody's rights or valuing everybody's, you know, feelings and ability to be here. But, you know, there's certainly libertarian publications that I've, you know, certainly taken a dip into and, you know, read just to have that perspective and just to try to, you know, kind of understand where other people are coming from at the very, very least, like just trying to get it on that level. Even if I don't agree, I mean, if I don't think I'm going to be, you know, swayed by something, I want to know what the arguments are. I want to know what people think. And I want to I want to have good faith arguments with people that are informed and intelligent and not just me.
It helps you sharpen your own arguments,
that
too.
That too,
yes. Like, to know, like, you know, you're not just speaking to the choir.
Yeah. It even it even sometimes helps me to not even just sharpen my arguments, but figure out where I stand on something, right? So sometimes, obviously, this will be something where, like, I'll read an editorial in the Wall Street Journal that, like, I know going in I'm going to disagree with. But, you know, I said it moments ago, like, I'm very far to the left on the so-called spectrum. But I also stay abreast of, like, more center-left and even, like, center-center publications and podcasts and things like that. Like, it would be easy for someone like me to listen to Chapo Trap House and be like, oh, yeah, like, they probably would vote the same way I vote forever on everything. But when I listen to, like, Slate Political Gab Fest, like, someone like David Plotz is someone who is...
You want to strangle?
I want to strangle often when he says that, like... Sure. We need way more political corruption.
Right.
But it's important for me to hear that, like, center left in America, like, center in the world.
Right.
Maybe even center right in the spectrum of, you know, Western Europe and stuff. Right now, who the fuck knows? But that stuff is important for me as someone who is left, who is to the left, to make sure that I'm at where I want to be at when it comes to these questions of reform versus kind of like larger revolutionary change versus, you know, like there's all of these different modes of change and improvement that are possible. And it's important for me to like think about the ones that are more widely held than the stuff that I hold, because like that's the reality of the world we live in. Like, sorry, like we're not going to overturn like all labor laws in America tomorrow, Austin. That's not happening.
Not going to pass legislation to get rid of capitalism.
No, they're not. They're not. Exactly. And like, and also revolution probably won't happen in America. Like, that's just not like,
it's just not, sorry, Bernie. Way,
like,
yeah.
It's just not going that way. And even the like Bernie Sanders version of democratic socialism wasn't going to lead to the overturn of capitalism in America,
right.
You know?
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
What's another number? Where else can we go? 1 to 32.
10.
Thank you. It's hard. It's hard to just pick a number.
I was trying to think with a number that had meaning, and then I just gave up and said 10.
None of them have meanings. All right. Also, really quick to the other question, in case you're asking about International Games Press. I'm a Eurogamer. I like Rock, Paper, Shotgun.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Of course.
But we read English, so I bet you there's great French and German and Japanese and Spanish speaking.
Portuguese.
And all sorts of Portuguese game sites that we don't read. I would love to be able to read Portuguese to be able to get access to what the Brazilian game scene
same.
Is like right now.
Same.
Because it sounds like
same.
It's fucking weird, man.
It sounds like it's fucking
fascinating.
Cool as hell.
Really, really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this comes in from Dom, who says, "Hi, Waypoint Champs. I always see the statement that games are inherently political, which I agree with. Nothing exists in a vacuum. But do you think that there is a point in differentiating between natural political tones versus overt political messages in games? Environmentalism in Sonic as like a natural political background thing, versus racism in Mafia 3, which is like right up front. Also, what do you think the practical differences are between allegorical politics versus explicit politics, i.e. racism against elves or Augs or Omnics versus against, you know, people of color, queer folk, etc. Love the show. Great stuff. Please keep it up. Thank you, Dom." What do you think about those two things?
Blanket statement that there's plenty of room for both.
Yeah,
and different types of things will do different types of things well. And that's beginning opening statement of like a much more complex argument. And
but I think that that's actually one of those like opening statements that is that we risk gilding the lily a little bit here, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, that's the answer. The answer is that I don't want every game to be Mafia 3.
Right.
That is not a super effective way of teaching people. It's one way of teaching people, but like as someone who spent time in front of a classroom, and you know this too, Danielle, like sometimes you need to like soothe people and bring them in slowly and playfully and not necessarily by hitting them over the head with a hammer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Patrick?
Yeah. I mean, and also just there's different, then we talked about this with Mafia and lots of other games where like there's just different approaches to this stuff, and also games are just still figuring out what those approaches are. And so some of them are going to be,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, hitting you over the head. Some of them are going to be more subtle. And I guess, I don't know, like, keep an open mind to that stuff. Like, developers are going to kind of fuck it up as they, yeah, as they figured out their way of, you know, messaging sounds it, you know, makes it seem a little too blunt, but, you know, how you, you know, put messages into games or values, like, we're just figuring that stuff out. And so, yeah, sometimes it's going to be not as elegant,
yeah,
as it might be.
The second thing there, I think I take a slightly harder stance on the, like, difference between racism against elves versus racism against, like, people stuff, in that, yeah, like, this could be a time and place thing of just, like, I'm so exhausted by, like, it's racism
metaphors.
Elves. Yeah, right, sure. because they all fall apart for me, and this is not a novel position, of, like, the X-Men, mutants in the world of Marvel are not, like, people of color in that I can't kill people by taking my glasses off.
Right.
Cyclops will, right? Like, the only way that works is if there are people who are classified as mutants and people believe that they have special powers, the way that Mike Brown was referred to by Darren Wilson as being like the Hulk or looking like a demon, but actually not being either of those things. Yeah. And then, like, what if Cyclops took off his glasses and everyone was like, oh no, he's going to kill us with his laser eyes. Like, no, I don't have laser eyes. Like, oh no, you're killing people. Like, that would be the only actual equivalent there. And so that falls apart for me really often, but that doesn't mean that we should stop. I'm not saying, like, stop making X-Men comics or stop having those narratives where mages are being corralled because they're dangerous or whatever. But, like, treat those things with the complexity that those characters deserve, and do your best to make sure your audience understands the difference. I got really frustrated with the mages stuff in the Dragon Age series for a long time because of this. Because, like, that's a game in which they say over and over again that mages are super dangerous, and they are super dangerous. Unless, one, you're playing one, in which case it's super safe. None of your spells ever go wrong. You can become a blood mage, and everything will go according to plan forever. And two, because it's a familiar storytelling, I don't think any of the games until Inquisition ever made me sympathetic to a Templar. Over and over, the Templars are the groups that are the, like, knights who, like, jail the mages in that series. Over and over again, like, oh, I'm going to sympathize with the mages who are imprisoned. And if you're doing the one-to-one, like, here is an oppressed group being locked up by the non-oppressed group, by the group in power, like, yes, I'm always going to side with the oppressed and not the oppressor. Like, the Murakami line of, like, I'm always going to side with the rock instead of the wall that is being thrown at. But, like,
I thought we were talking about two different wrestlers for a second there.
Sorry. I was talking about the
who's
author.
Who's the wall?
The rock and the wall.
There it is.
I'm always, yeah. Haruki Murakami, big wrestling fan. But there is something important to, like, work out the, like, oh, actually there's an interesting story to tell once you recognize that mages are dangerous in a way that people are not dangerous, and also it sucks to what happens to them. So, like,
yeah.
I don't know, follow the fiction, like, trust your fiction and your reader to deal with complex stuff. Sorry, this is a long one.
This came to mind as a bit of a tangent, it came to mind part of this question, and also because it was something that Austin and I were kind of talking about earlier today.
Oh, right.
There's this game coming out pretty soon called We Are Chicago, which is a game about its ambitions are to tell a Telltale-style Telltale-style sort of, like, interactivity. That's sort of the model of that they're going for, about what it's like to be black on the south side of Chicago, which is a lot different than living in a lot of other parts of Chicago. And when I saw that game at PAX East, I guess, like a year and a half ago. Like, it was a while. And we sat down with my wife, and they were showing us the game. We both were doing it in VR. And
I forgot it's VR.
About 2 minutes in, my wife taps me on the shoulder and goes, "I don't want to play this anymore." And I was like, "Why?" She's like, "It's bad." Oh, and I was like, "Oh." And in my head, I was like, "Maybe, like, you just don't get it, Katie." And I kept playing it, and then I was like, "Oh, this is bad." Like, I the ambitions of what this team wants to do is interesting. I want a story about the South Side of Chicago to be told, because there is a lot that could be told there. And so after PAX East, I was looking at, like, what stories I wanted to write about it for Kotaku, and I was like, "Man, like, We Are Chicago is an interesting game." And so I wrote about it, and my editor, Steven Totillo, was like, "Can I ask you something about this?" And he goes, "You really seem like you're pulling a punch." And yeah. I was like, "You're right." He's like, "I don't think you liked this game, but I think you're trying to say it's got some problems, but maybe they'll figure it out," which is sort of the standard line in a preview. And I mean, he was right. Like, the reason I was pulling a punch, and the reason I even thought about scrapping writing about it at all, was because, like, they're trying to do a good thing, and it's not, doesn't seem like it's working in the form they had. And, like, I just wanted to kind of pretend it didn't exist, as opposed to, like, dragging it out there and this becoming an example of, like, well, when you try and make games like this, like, look, like, you just can't do it. So you just shouldn't do that shit.
Right.
And so,
and that's the thing is, like, that's an opportunity when you have the resources, both, like, time and editorial, like, help to dig into that situation. That's where you, like, find really good, like, that's where the gold is. Like, that's where, that's a moment to dig into your own experience. And you're like, "Oh, I even want to write about the fact that I didn't want to write about this for fear of the thing you just said."
Right.
And that's interesting. And that's how we end up, like, getting somewhere decent in the future, is, like, by having those really difficult conversations instead of, like, putting it, locking it away and never talking about it, because it would be, like, embarrassing to this thing we wish was better, you know? Like,
yeah, it's like we're like the advocacy side of you, like, runs in conflict with sort of, like, the critic side of you.
Right.
And it's like, you know, and by talking it out and by having my editor push back on me, like, it resulted in a piece where I was, like, really critical of the game, but the developers were really receptive to that. And, you know, I wasn't, like, you know, like, you know, really mean. I was just more like, "Hey, this isn't working. I'm hoping by vocalizing this and putting it on, like, one of the largest platforms possible, you're going to take it seriously and hopefully do a better job in the time you have left." And I don't know, Austin, we'll find out.
We'll find out very soon, in fact.
Yeah.
I whatever my hope is for that game, like, I played the same demo you did and had the same experience you did. I'm just like, "Man, I wish this was better than it is." And maybe it is, and we'll see, but, like, I am more interested in having a real relationship with that game, a real experience with that game, and reporting about what that experience was than I am about cheerleading for something because it does a thing. I will cheerlead their intention, but I'm not going to cheerlead a bad game because I wanted to do something good. Like, and instead, what I end up having to do sometimes is say, "I can see why people don't like this thing. I do like it. Let me drill down into why I do like it."
Right.
And let me be, I use this phrase a lot, but, like, let me be radically honest with my own experience. Like, I really do believe that we know in our heart of hearts whether or not we are enjoying our time with a thing, outside of some exceptions that are like, "Oh, I can't tell, like, I'm bouncing between two." But even then, you should be able to talk about the fact that you are bouncing between multiple perspectives.
Right.
Or that you're having a hard time nailing something down. You know that you're having a hard time with something, or that you like it, or that you don't. And so, like, from that point, you can get to good criticism. No matter whether or not you're, like, over the moon for something, whether you hate it or whether you're ambivalent about it, there's something to be said about that experience if you can fucking drill into it enough. And sometimes that thing can be like, I think that this doesn't achieve what it's going for, but part of me really is in love with the fact that they fucking went for it. And that's an okay position to have, as long as you're upfront and honest with that being your you know, your view.
Yeah.
I think we have time maybe for one more, which is, we have 30 of them, but here we are.
Well, if people like this podcast, like, you know, if they enjoy this, like, slant on it, like, you know, when things get slower or, like, a special one-offs, like, I think the three of us would be more than happy to revisit it.
Totally. Absolutely. So 31 more questions. Give me a number.
Lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7.
Yeah.
Zip up here to 7. This one comes in from Franklin. Who says, "Hello, friends. Do you think it's more respectful for a game with a romance system to define the sexuality of a character, as it does in like Dragon Age Inquisition, or should they allow everyone to essentially be bisexual, as in Stardew Valley and some other?" I remember another BioWare game got criticism for this. I think it was Dragon Age 2 got criticism for this, because everyone in that game could be romanced regardless of what your gender was.
Yeah, thoughts? You know, like a statement that there are places where both approaches can work. In Stardew Valley, it's your town, and that's sort of a... It's also made by, I think, one person, and I respect that some folks, you know, a lot goes into particular systems. Personally, for me, I like it when a character is specific, and I also really kind of hate... I'm bisexual, okay? And I sort of take issue with the... Well, everybody's bisexual as a, like, the sort of weird default state, as opposed to, like, it's a very intentional choice, like, somebody to be bi as opposed to being gay or whatever, pan or whatever other sort of sexuality. So it's like, I definitely roll my eyes a little bit at that approach at times, for sure. I think it's good to be specific with your characters if you're telling a specific story. I do think there is room for having sort of, you know, a different approach to that in different types of games, but... Yeah, if you're telling a story of Amy, who is bisexual, and it's like a very specific experience to Amy, I don't know, making this up, I don't know who Amy is, but that feels to me like a more honest sort of approach towards a character, a specific character in a specific story.
Yeah, because it seems like there's no default, you know, sexual...
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
There is
spot.
There's
and
no
so the,
only
the,
one preference. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think also like the idea of having defined sexualities for characters leads to more interesting storytelling, because the idea that you could attempt to romance someone in a game and they can reject you because they are not interested in you is more interesting storytelling.
Absolutely.
Than,
yes.
Like, you can bone whoever you want because you bought them enough gifts. Right.
Exactly.
You know, and so, so I think I can certainly I see the approach of just making it a flat system, but then I think making it a flat system where bi is the default takes away from people who are actually bisexual.
Exactly.
And that's in some ways no different than the default being straight and that gay being away from the norm. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I still think it's, I mean, if characters, they're people, and people are things, and so I tend to fall on the side of make the characters one thing or the other, whatever that thing is, that, you know, that's a whole spectrum, but make, you know, those people, these characters, these people have feelings on what those things are, presumably, and
presumably,
I think that makes more like actual people than just making it sort of a system that goes up and down.
That is part of their characterization in the same way that their, like, funny comments and their complicated backstories and even their character builds. Do you know what I mean? Like, I also don't like Final Fantasy VII because everybody can equip any materia, which is, like, a weird-ass, like, this is, like, a silly fucking metaphor for a very serious thing, and I recognize that straight up, and I'll say something actually serious about it in a second.
It still makes sense, though.
But, like,
it works.
But, like, one of the reasons why I don't like Final Fantasy VII is that it's coming off of Final Fantasy VI, a game in which every character...
Unfair.
...has... Okay, every character in Final Fantasy VI has... incredible mechanics built around that character. That, like, when you are playing as Terra, like, her mechanics are different than playing as Sabin or Sabin.
The dude who can suplex a train?
Yeah, he can suplex a train. And
hell,
to do that,
yeah, he can.
To do that, you input, like fighting game commands to do his moves. And that's, like, a bit of, like, characterization through mechanics that like, reflects who that character is. And then you go to Final Fantasy VII, where it's like, oh, yeah, just... put on fucking the mimic thing so that you can just like every character is just a blank slate mechanically, not outside of limit breaks and weapons and shit, but like fuck off, that stuff barely matters really. You know what I'm talking about if you've played that game a bunch.
Also, I just want to make clear, when I was saying unfair, I was saying it was unfair to Final Fantasy VII because Final Fantasy VI was so good.
Appreciate it.
I want to make sure, that's clear.
Now.
Thank you.
Because I was
Final Fantasy
VI
is the best of the old school Final Fantasies, and then Final Fantasy VIII is the best of the PlayStation Final Fantasy.
All right, you're going to get a whole bunch of other shit for that.
Facts. Just like,
but
look it up. Look it up. Look it up on facts.com. Final Fantasy VIII is the best of the PlayStation.
Zynga.zone.
It's my new website.
If you go to politifact.org, which is a politics episode, they'll say it. But I think that I want to carry that same degree of specificity into all sorts of characterization. Like, I don't think that that's an unfair thing to demand from our games, that like our characters, that or not to demand, like this isn't, we're not like putting a you know, right. It's not nailing.
Get your agenda off my lawn.
Right, I'm not nailing feces into the church door, right? You know what I mean? But I am saying that I'm going to like games more that manage to do good characterization. So to say the other thing here is there's a really good post by Todd Harper called She's Not That Into You from 2015 about Dragon Age Inquisition and Cassandra, who rejected, he was playing as a female character. And he says, I'm just going to read from this post. He says, now I'm certain people may be saying, why does she have to close it off? Can't she just have good humor, playful flirting? And I imagine it could if Cassandra were a different person. If it were Iron Bull, for example, and if Bull weren't pansexual, I don't think it'd be a problem. But Cassandra is who she is, and to be honest, I think expecting her to go on flirting with you when it makes her uncomfortable is selfish. She, this character, has every right to shut it down. And then a little bit lower, later on, he says, the game lets me make decisions that it knows from the start, that I know from the start, are going to go nowhere. But the point is that the outcome of those decisions doesn't matter. The journey, my deepening relationship with Cassandra, is the point. And no matter how sad I am that my Inquisitor can't be out there with this amazing knight at her side, I am happy she got the chance to try and to see that side of her.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that is also would also be great, which is that, like, in general, games need to get better at letting characterization be its own reward and characterizing, you know, showing these different sides of the characters, even when it's not like the A plot, like even if it's not the romance, even if this character doesn't have a romance plot, it should have the character should also have a plot that's just as interesting and good if you're not romancing them. That thing, those plots aren't the only way to get good characterization and to find out more about the characters. There are characters, people are multifaceted, and I'm not saying that, like, for every romance plot, you should also have a plot about whatever their hobby is or whatever,
right,
but, like, find another way to have an interesting relationship with that character and have that play out, you know? And that's my advice for you. Patrick, I know you have to go pick up a child. No, wait.
Apparently.
Is that what you're doing? You're picking up a child?
Yeah. They start charging you by the minute after 6 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
I'm fine. We're okay. I'm just saying they start charging
minute.
By the minute.
That's intense.
Like a call.
God.
There's like a baby cap.
Yeah. Well, hey, those people want to go home.
Fair.
I don't blame them. They've been watching kids all day.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I understand. Kids. They got to go watch their own kids, maybe, in some cases.
Yeah.
Patrick, you go pick up your kid and
I will.
I hope that you have a good weekend and a good
you
day
too.
Off on Monday. Let's all take some time to rest and relax and reflect as we go into this big week of politics and change.
Yeah.
Change is happening in America.
Mm-hmm. It sure is on some level.
We are going to be covering that change and then that political stuff a lot this week. It's not the only coverage we'll be doing this week. Obviously, we'll be writing about games like we always do, and we love games. One of the questions we're
talking about that Gravity Rush.
Totally. We absolutely. Well, that will still be political, won't it, Patrick?
Yeah, but that just happens to be political as opposed to.
There is some
all
shit
things
in
happen
that game.
To be political.
There is some shit in that game.
You know,
we'll get to it. Not bad shit. We're not.
Good
I wasn't
shit.
Like,
it's a great
yeah,
game.
It's
you should play that game.
A pretty good game. It's actually. I'm pretty into it. I'm going to play some more of it this weekend. But on top of all the normal stuff we're going to do, we're going to have stories about the ACA and about the Women's March on Washington and stuff like that. So stay tuned for that stuff. Come to waypoint.vice.com if you have questions. You can write into gaming@vice.com with the subject questions. Anything else? I think that's
no,
the big
you
stuff.
Can also write into questions@gaming.com, but I don't know where those go.
I don't know what's going to happen to those.
You should write
ask
to
questions@videogames.com.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, send your political questions to questions@videogames.com. We'll see how the giant
gaming.com
bomb servers.
Cannot be reached. Who owns Gaming.com.
We're going
to look into this right now.
I'm doing it right now.
Thank you for just reporting live.
Who is?
You can find all the stuff we do at waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, digitalpyramids.com, twitter.com/waypoint, youtube.com/waypointvice.
Nice. Instagram.
Waypoint Vice. Instagram. I don't know what we do over there. I don't look at
Danica does stuff over there, I think.
She does whatever. She's smart. She does smart Instagram stuff. She's on the gram.
She's Danielle, on the
people.
Zeman G of Hong Kong. I probably really butchered that name.
Don't dock Zeman G. Stop it.
No, it's he's got his other stuff.
Okay.
Hidden. But he owns gaming.com.
Thanks, Zeman.
But for $10, that networksolutions.com will help me get this domain. So
$10.
That's like their finder's fee. You won't
No, that just that allows you to email someone to make a pitch.
I understand.
Wow.
Well, hey, we'll see.
I really like games.
Games are pretty great.
A lot.
You could say I'm a gamer.
You could say I'm a gamer with a capital G. Zeman. Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at Twitter, at Patrick Klubik, Facebook, at P Klubik.
Danielle?
You can find me on Twitter. I just coughed in the middle of saying Twitter. Twitter.
Well, sometimes Twitter doesn't, it kind of makes you.
Sometimes you Twitter makes you a little sick. Twitter. During a week like this, Twitter might make you a little sick. So on Twitter, I am Danielle R.I., and I am Danielle Riendo, writer on Facebook.
You find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker, on Facebook at Austin Walker Games, where you can read all of my tweets because that's just how that is set up.
Good.
Again, tune in all week. We will do our live podcast on Friday. Wait a second, maybe that's not true.
Yeah, we'll do something on Friday.
There will be a lot of things happening on Friday on the inauguration day.
Yeah, we're still kind of figuring out what our plans are. So
there might be a UK stream that day. Also, on top, we're going to stream a lot that day. Part of that will happen from the UK.
Yep,
where stuff is happening. Also, it'll be maybe a reprieve from America. If you need a part-time escape. And then, but we'll definitely have a podcast Friday, so listen for that. And until then, take a deep breath this week. It's going to be a long one. And I think that's basically all I got. I think that's the only... Do I have any wise words of wisdom?
Be good to fellow human beings.
This is the thing I will... Okay, here's the thing I actually wanted to say. And okay. I'm going to end on this small message, which is... And I'm just lifting this message from Chris Remo from Idle Thumbs, which is we often think about these things, about the world and the ways the media that we consume in a binary state of stuff that's good for me and is like politics and news about what's happening today and important stuff that's happening right now and distraction of oh, I'm going to play a new game. I'm going to escape into Gravity Rush 2 or I'm going to play The Witcher and not have to think about anything else. Or I'm going to play a mobile phone game. I'm playing Solitarica. It's pretty cool. But there's this whole other set of things in this in the middle of that spectrum and elsewhere on different axes of things that can be thoughtful and things that where you can zero in on thinking in an important, good way, in a way that lets your mind be active and changes your worldview and lets you think about things in a more abstract sense or in a deeply material sense, but that isn't just your face being jammed up against bad news over and over again until you feel like shit all the fucking time. Go to a museum, read a book, put on an album you really like and sit in a chair and listen to it this week. Give yourself these things that are not rapid fire important, but are broad spectrum, big picture important. About the world and your place in it and find some middle ground respite there where you don't have to be fully chaotic and you don't have to be completely distracted. You can kind of be at ease, but also engaged. I think that's my advice for you in this long week.
Yeah.
Take that advice to heart. We'll see you on Friday. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.